Hey everybody, welcome to Real Life Sci-Fi with Wade and Willie. I'm Wade.
I'm Willie.
This is a podcast about the paranormal and contemporary mythology. Patreon.com/Real Life Sci-Fi for access to 2 bonus episodes a week, video feeds,
and more.
RealLifeSci-Fi.show. We've got all of our links there. Did you put my reaction channel up there yet?
Yep, it's right on top. Wink.
Yes. Yes. Let's welcome aboard the SSRLSF. It's an actor, clown, and astrologer from the Star Eater Astrologer podcast, Athena Reddy.
Hello.
Hello. Dude, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I do need to ask, I'm coming at this with very little bias. Clowning is having a resurgence, and I have yet to keep up with what that actually means.
Yeah, well, you should come out to some clown if you're in Los Angeles. There's so much of it. I am
down to clown. Does that
help? I'm feeling the down to clown vibe. And so if you're down to clown, no, there's a really great entirely free thing at the Elysian on Wednesdays, usually at 5, that's called Play Space. And you can just jump in and try 2 minutes of a bit and watch a whole variety of like some of the best clowns plus some of the newest clowns just trying out 2 minutes and just clown, an ineffable thing to describe, honestly.
But I just wanted to ask you to describe it.
I feel like Chad Damiani has an entire podcast and he's like the grandfather of clown in this city.
Okay.
Where he still cannot describe clown. But I would say, like, from my perspective, a comedy form that's not necessarily about a punchline and is a little more about vibes and not as like rigid and exclusive as improv can be. So
have you done improv? Did you try improv?
I have. Okay. Yeah, I did. I did a master's degree in acting in the UK, and I did impro there, and then I also did the Pit in New York City like years before that. And I always found improv to be, I didn't like the community of it. It can be a community that like excludes like someone like me.
Yeah, it's so clicky. No matter where you're going.
Yeah.
Is it because a lot of people have the idea that improvers are like dorky and not cool?
Well, I always got the impression that they were dorky in a way where like they may have been, and this is not true of all of them. It was just my early experience, you know.
Okay.
And
I don't think anyone's gonna.
I'm talking.
Hate you for,
I'm talking
like,
2009. but I, as a queer person in the space, it was a lot of dudes, and it was a lot of like very straight energy, to be honest.
I've never tried to do improv, but from what I know of the UCB around that same time, kind of bro-y.
Very bro-y.
I don't want to say frat, but like. On that end of the spectrum when it comes to bros.
Yeah, bro-y. And if you have to play a girl in an improv sketch and people really haven't learned, especially at the time I was doing it, about like boundaries or consent or like not pigeonholing you or some shit like that. You know, like you're kind of at a different kind of risk. And so I always produce my own like sketches and like surreal comedy work. And I was in a duo with a really good friend of mine, and we made a web series, but I'm much more interested in creating surreal worlds that have like world building that I can bring to people. And so for me, clown is very much that. First of all, it's a really queer space. Secondly, people have crazier outfits, and like, I respect it much more. Like, no one is trying to fit themselves in any kind of box. And clown is much less about reaching some kind of punchline or ever seeming cool and capable, and more about living in a space of vulnerability and like leaning into a certain kind of cringe. Like, a good clown performance is watching someone who you're not sure if they're bombing or not, and then they win you over and they like live in that space.
Yeah.
And it's like really beautiful. So it can also be really like sad or moving or like, you know, or cathartic even. So there's a lot of avenues of clown, but there's so much happening in Los Angeles. You can pretty much go out any day of the week and either watch clowns working on things or watch a clown show. Like, I tend to play a lot of, like, people who take themselves too seriously, and I go so far into that character that what makes me funny is how offended I am that they're laughing.
Right,
and so
right.
Clowns are creatures who are eating and responding to the audience in a really specific way. So a clown performance that you see, if it's really good, I think depends so much on how much they're listening to the audience, either like sound-wise. You know, there are some like forms of clown that exist for the clown to insult the audience, and that's how they're bringing them in, you know, and there are some forms of clown where it's just like, it feels like you're watching a vulnerable little boy trying to stumble around, and, you know, so the laughs are important. Like, it just depends on, like, you as a creature, like your character, your clown character as a creature.
Yeah.
It works differently than stand up.
Well, let me ask you just last thing on clowning, because I want to talk about the astrology too. But how similar to, like, the French? I mean, you've seen Baskets, right? Where
of course,
he goes to France and he becomes a legit clown or whatever. Do you still have, like, tenuous connections to that?
100%. There are tons of clowns in LA who have studied in France and stuff like that. Like, and my background is in classical theater in a master's program at a British conservatory. And I was introduced to clown in that space, in those kinds of things where you are taking it terribly seriously. So, like, I did have a module in clown, and I share a lot of, like, language and skills with a lot of the performers here who do that. So you could go to a clown mic or, like, a clown variety show or show here, and you can see a variety of people who have studied in France. I know two people who went to France and studied with, like, the big guy there or whatever and came back. Yeah. And it's sort of like that is constantly still being, like, weaved and braided into the new avenues that people are discovering in.
Interesting. Did you have to come up with a character, and can you describe your individual face paint?
Oh, so I don't have face paint for the three characters that I
have. No, but when you were in school, did they make you do the...
I've done this with people before. Like, I've done this with friends before, but the first clown exercise I ever did was all about finding what's naturally funny about you without putting anything on and being able to stand in that and being able to, like, really understand what's funny about you, whether you like it or not. So the first clown exercise I ever did, it was way more about the vulnerability piece of it, where there were only 13 of us on my master's course. And basically one at a time, like, we were all sitting down, and one at a time, we would each walk into the studio, and the instructions were just like, walk through the door, wait, open the door, look at everybody in the eye, close the door, walk into the middle of the room, make eye contact with everyone again, and just stand there. And when you just stand there and don't try to do anything, something will arise that is funny about you. And it doesn't have to do with you trying, and you don't put on the, I feel like to me, you don't put on the trying or the character making until you understand at the core why people might laugh at you and how you kind of respond to that. Or do you have the feeling of, like, laughing with them or them laughing at you? And that's, like, a deep psychological thing. For me, like I was saying, two of the characters I do right now are dignity clowns, because I do have this thing where I was teased and laughed at. So I worked through this weird thing where it is actually funny that I get indignant. It is actually funny that I can, like, play a straight man who wants to push back and shame you for, you know, yelling at me. So all of those feelings come up in response to the laughter.
What you just described of clowning sounds very much like what a lot of actors are trying to get into, which is, like, what about me is interesting, and, like, how do I apply those to the role? So that must help with, like, auditions and stuff, right? You audition?
Totally. Yeah, I do. I do. I have an agent. I'm auditioning for TV all the time.
Is it a nightmare? Is it horrible? How is it?
I've been doing it for so long. Like, I started as a model when I was a teenager, so it's not as brutal as that. It's not as... Like the thing about acting is that, like, yeah, it's fucking brutal, but it's not as brutal as, like, a New York Fashion Week cattle call, being a model and being 19. Like, the thick skin they speak of, I definitely have. And I think the reason why I sought out going to such a specific drama school was to melt away the thick skin a little bit. because I, yeah, so it is brutal. It does suck. We were on strike. It's a weird year.
It's been very weird. Has it picked up? Because I haven't seen it picking up, but I'm I feel like I failed in my career, because if you know that it's picked up before I do, then I've failed, because I'm a writer. And so I come first. I come before you guys in the process.
I feel like that's not necessarily true, because they were still able to hire actors in different sectors of things. Like commercial was still going. So if I just counted it on my auditions. But like, yeah, I mean, I only moved here 2 years ago. And I...
What a time. What a time to move out here.
It's been a weird, strikey, weird time. But like, I have a really weird gauge on it, though, because I happened to sign with like a better agent than I had ever been with like about a year ago. And so for me, the quality of auditions went up, and I counted that as like a success. So I don't know if I had had her, you know, pre-strike versus post-strike, but I have a lot of like, well, this is good for me. Like, you know, like this is that is good person to meet at this point for me, you know. So it's hard to say, but I know a lot of people are
It's rough. It's rough. But whatever. We're not here to talk about that. Let's talk
We're not here to talk about the biz.
We don't want to talk about the biz. Well, whatever. Let's talk about astrology. What's the literal thing that you do?
So I'm a consulting astrologer, and I've been working professionally for about 10 years, but I've been studying astrology since I was about 15. I do people's natal charts and the current transits. So I make a podcast where I cover every month's transits, i.e. the astrological weather that's happening. And I talk a little bit about how you might apply that to your natal chart. And my podcast is really geared toward people who are interested in learning astrology for themselves in a lot of ways, because a lot of people have like an app that has their natal chart on it, and they have like computerized descriptions of things, and there are some great ones. But I feel like I started the podcast in a large way to talk about some of the philosophical and symbolic things about astrology in a way where like those episodes are evergreen, and then I do the transits, the astrological weather that people can start engaging with. So I feel like I have a really teacherly attitude toward that particular kind of astrology curious person, because I just kept meeting people who knew a little bit about astrology, or when they found out I was an astrologer, they would show me their app, and I would be like, whoa, 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 I've been in this for decades. Don't show me the app. You know, don't show me the app.
Hang on.
You know, nothing against the apps, because a lot of people get into it and then they go deeper. But as a person who's
CoStar
is an app that people will shove in my, people will put in my face a list of their aspects. And I'm like, why are you giving me a list? I need to see the chart. And I also, different astrologers use different techniques. And so going to an astrologer, depending on which astrologer you go to, they're using different techniques, or they've become specialized in different techniques. But yeah, I take clients basically, and I take them through their natal chart, and I answer their specific questions, and I help them solve problems utilizing the language of astrology, and I help them understand the current transits going through their charts. So that's what I do.
It sounds good to me. The podcast is called the Star Eater Astrologer Podcast. Is that, they could just Google that.
Yeah, Star Eater Astrology Podcast.
I'm sorry.
That's
okay. Did I misread that? I don't know what's going on with me.
And you can find all of like my writing and services about astrology on athenaready.com/astrology. So I've got links to the podcast there, as well as like other stuff that I've written. And it's a great place to see what I continue to write. Like, and that's where you can find like consultation options and services.
This is great, man. I can tell that I already like your brain. And so I'm excited to get into it. But before we do that, we have a thing here on the show called the Wow Scale.
Wow.
And it stands for Wait or Willie. It's a 5-question quiz. At the end of the 5 questions, I'll give you a score anywhere between 0 and 5. If you're more of a 0, you're more of a Wade. If you're more of a 5, you're more of a Willie. You ready to be Wade on the Wow Scale?
Yeah, let's do it.
First question, 3-parter. Do you believe in aliens? If so, have they visited Earth? If so, have they visited Earth in the last 300 years?
Can I answer with an agnostic?
Yes.
Okay. See, it's tough because there are some days where I am agnostic and I go, well, give me the, let's show me, like, you know, and then I will respond. Mm-hmm. And there are other days where I'm like, oh gosh, science is so complicated and how can we think we know everything? And like, what if there is something that is like microscopic that is alien that we don't know? And like, there are technically things that we cannot perceive. And so it can be very difficult. But I think like in my day to day, I'm not buying a lot of the UPI stuff that's coming through. Like the part of me that is like, show me is still there. But I do go down these cosmic rabbit holes of like really having an existential crisis about the way that we've built our perception. And I know that there's more that we haven't discovered about how our perception even works. And so I'm fucked. I can't answer this. Am I very in the middle?
Let's move forward. I'm gonna
Hold on. Let me just say this real quick. Supposedly an interesting date coming up. November 13th is a congressional hearing again, something dealing with intelligent life in the universe. There's supposed to be some kind of big disclosure happening that day. And if any of these whistleblowers die before then they will pump out this information before the congressional hearing. So just saying, like, I don't know how real this is, but this has been put out there that by this November 13th, we will definitely have a new idea of intelligent life out there. So I'm just excited to see what it's going to be.
Willie.
They're like threatening the community.
I love that you believe that it will never happen. There's no way. I'm not trying to put either of you on the spot, but November 13th, I don't know how far you've looked ahead. Is there any significance to November 13th when it comes to like the charts? Is there a lot of like, unknown or
no, it's a really big and shifting time right now. Between now, like 2025 is one of those years for astrologers that's like a pretty big deal. It's a pretty big like sands shifting deal. This month in November, Pluto, which is one of the three outer planets, and the three outer planets we see as like if the inner planets, the rest of the planets are kind of human goings on and things we can relate to, the three outer planets are more like the mind of God. And so, for example, when an outer planet is touching an inner planet, that person's personality might have a sense of like being alien or unusual to them, right? So the three outer planets are doing like major shifts. They don't move that often into new signs. Like they mark eras and decades and stuff. And one of the really interesting things that's happening next month is that Pluto, the slowest moving planet, and it's still a planetary body in astrology. So is the moon, so is the sun. We call them all planets in astrology, but that's just a different language. That Pluto, the slowest moving one, is really starting a new era for like a couple of decades going into Aquarius. And so we're having it go from Capricorn, and Pluto kind of brings like a churning, overturning annihilation to things. So Capricorn is kind of all about systems that we've built as humans, and that Pluto has slowly been going through there for a few decades. And it's kind of all about like structure and things that are solid and things that stand. So Pluto's been going through there. It's going to go into Aquarius. And Aquarius is really all about technology and this idea of humanity at large, like this idea of like the human species as a larger thing, a less individualistic thing. So we see Pluto going into Aquarius, and we really talk as astrologers a lot about technology and the shifts in technology, because Aquarius is very famously about like innovation, about like what's the next step, what's the next system. If we've dug up the old system and now it's in pieces, we imagine the next system. And it's a very technology focused area. So astrologers who do want the aliens to come can often with this can frame it like that. And there's stuff that goes on with Uranus too. Uranus is a planet where you say like, expect the unexpected. This is the lightning bolt in astrology. And there's a Uranus transit next year as well. But I could go off.
So shit's going down is what you're saying.
Shit is going down. I mean, there are things happening in 2025's astrology that haven't happened since our last civil war. You can go back and listen to the 2020 astrologers tiptoeing around, like the good ones tiptoeing around the words like pandemic or illness or something like and you know, and this one I think a lot of the astrology community has been a lot more vocal about saying, here's what the astrology, the sky weather looked like during the Civil War, hasn't looked like that. Oh, it's gonna look like that. And there's shit in there that's telling the story of our history. You know, history doesn't repeat itself, it rhymes. And astrology is a language to help us like decode those rhymes in a lot of ways.
Where'd you come up with that? That's really good.
I heard it and then it got into my...
It's good.
Like, it got into me.
All right, let's move on. Ghost.
Okay. I have like a romantic Victorian relationship with ghost aesthetics, and that's hard to break from my brain. But I think when you have the real experience of losing someone, and I lost a friend earlier this year. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, she was amazing. And we had gone to community college together, and she was just a really big part of my young years.
Of course.
I was swimming in the Atlantic Ocean in Maine as a child, and it was really cold because it was August and it's really cold, and none of my cousins would ever go in the water or stick their heads in for too long, but I was like really hardcore about it, and I would like open my eyes underwater and everything like that, and I was definitely giving myself an altered experience. But I had the experience of every single time, this one time I went under the water and opened my eyes, I thought I saw this man swimming, and I bobbed up and down, and he was getting closer and closer. I felt the feeling of him going through me. And so I attributed that to being a ghost for a really long time in my life. But I like, for me, it's always everything can be true all at once. Like, I don't know. It's just like I changed my perception glasses very depending on whether or not I need to agree on the consensus reality with everyone or not. Like, I can go into a mode where I decide.
Yeah, aliens, ghosts, a little amorphous. I've got one that is more tangible. Bigfoot. What does your gut say?
Yes.
Oh, snap.
Yeah.
Okay. The Illuminati.
This is actually a really hard no from me.
Oh, shit.
And I have a really strong belief about that because I think it's a lot of people like the Vigilant Citizen people and all of those kind of people trying to decode symbols about art that they don't understand. And then the artists trolling them. So I think it's an aesthetic that's created that people are playing a symbolic performance art with each other, and half the people do not understand that they're playing.
It's like
the
geotagging.
Game.
It's like old school geotagging, right?
It's just geotagging.
All right, last question. The multiverse.
Yes.
Do you think you do?
Yes.
On paper, I'm getting a 3.
Then, all I can think about is those bumper stickers from when I was a kid that said, wow, like Whip 'em Out Wednesday, where like they would have them on their car. I don't know if this was just a radio station near me and that like I'm from trashy Long Island, but like there was Whip 'em Out Wednesday and like these people would have them on their car.
That
and
sounds
they would...
very much like you're just from trashy Long Island.
Wow. Yeah, and it would just be like, and it would just be like encouragement for people to flash them. It was a very Girls Gone Wild time period.
Of course. Of course. Yeah.
Oh.
All right. Well, listen, I can't wait to dive into this topic. I'm really excited about your thought. This is like, because I can't pinpoint you, and I think you're going to bring an interesting perspective to it. Willie, hit us with that topic.
Tonight on Real Life Sci-Fi, mapping the DMT world. So many people that have taken DMT talk about seeing beings that they interact with and experiencing a very geometrical world that seems more real than reality. When you take DMT, it usually takes 10 minutes. Now they can keep you in that state for an hour. And these psychonauts are now trying to map out that world and specifically interact and engage with these beings to find out if this is a real experience. Is it a hallucination? Find out tonight on Real Life Sci-Fi. Okay, so now in Colorado, DMT is legal, but there are a couple groups trying to tackle this. I think it's Imperial College in Oxford. And then also in Colorado, there are groups trying to figure out how to map and interact with this world too. You know, I've never taken DMT. I feel like if there's any, I have anxiety. If there's any fear for me to take it, then I'm not ready to take it because it's not a psychedelic fun experience. It's a mind altering
an upheaval
way of life. Yeah.
Athena, have you done DMT?
I have not. I have bipolar disorder, which I'm fine with being open about. But, you know, I've had psychosis and mania a couple times throughout the years. I was diagnosed very early. And there's a lot of recreational drugs that are not safe for me, bar none. Like, it's just absolutely danger zone.
What would it trigger? What would these drugs trigger? Not DMT. But...
A lot of the drugs, like illegal drugs, or there's a lot of drugs that would like replicate symptoms of mine and keep me in, say, like a manic or depressed state for longer. If I have more than one drink, the after effects of alcohol, like it's a depressant, I'm at mm-hmm. risk for the knock-on effects of that to affect me for quite a while. So DMT is one that it's like, it has a lot in common with maybe a psychotic experience. Psychedelics and mm-hmm. people who have had psychosis are a bad combination, because you can, if you have the brain that's wired for psychosis,
you
could stay there. Like could stay in some version of that, like even if the drug wears off, just because of the way you're wired.
Because it triggers whatever, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. So just a little off topic, how do you have fun?
Well, I'm really interesting and have a lot of cool hobbies.
But if you can't go to a bar and do drugs, what else is there? Video?
I don't
games?
Know. While you were all like going to college and drinking and going to bars, I was studying The Blade. So I'm like, I don't know.
What's
like,
The Blade?
It's just an expression that means that while you guys were all out there partying, I was getting good at things. No, but like, that's not entirely true.
We were partying and also getting good at things.
Yeah, I know, it's probably true. Like socializing, which like, but I mean, I was like a really driven person. And it's kind of like when somebody, like what I've learned is that like when somebody quits alcohol, they have all of this energy to do other stuff and they have to take mm-hmm. it really seriously. I had that mindset since I was 16. My first psych hospitalization was at 16. The stakes were high because I had experienced like really difficult times, like suicidal ideation, suicide attempts. It's like not worth it. Yeah. And so it's like, I play board games. I'm a big nerd. I make costumes. I play guitar. I play clarinet. I learned.
Well, let's hang out because like I need to figure out how I can like live my life without.
Well, let me tell you, I have right here a magical world that you can go to called Dune Imperium Uprising, which I make my husband play almost every night. It's a very long game.
Every night. And you can play it with two people?
Yes, you have to run like an AI third character, which is a little annoying, but three is like makes it smoother. But we do. But he got it from me for my birthday in June, and we pretty much played it every single day for about a month and a half. And then he had to return to his studies. So I'm trying to get friends to come.
Set it up. Set up a game night. Let's do it. If there's anything about my group of friends, it's that we love a game night.
You should come out to Clown too.
I put it in my calendar. I want to like check it out.
Here's my question about Psychonauts. Okay. They're trying to map it. Athena, have you ever played Minecraft?
No, I actually haven't.
Okay. So in the Minecraft. God damn it.
Sounds cool.
Down in the mines of Minecraft.
In Minecraft, there's a subworld. You could call it hell. It's called the Nether. Mm-hmm. And when you enter into the Nether, you sort of don't know where you're going. It's this kind of like ambiguous place where unless you map it really, really, really well, you just get lost and die in there. My thinking is with DMT, and DMT actually sounds a lot like Salvia, where there's like gears and stuff, right?
It's like very machine.
Yeah.
A lot of the geometric world does feel machine, and the beings that people have interacted with feel very non-emotional or like computer-esque or robot-esque.
Well, yeah, just kind of like I imagine aliens like that. Right. Just kind of like, well, it's Spock, right? It's just Spock.
Yeah. I mean, I picture emotions don't work too well in the universe. And I mean, I hate to say that's a perception that I have.
Well, I feel like maybe their emotions are inside and they just don't.
Everyone does emotions differently. Again, that language thing, like maybe not picking up on the same language if it is aliens.
100%. But the question is, are these even the same guys? What are we calling them? Aliens? We're going to call them aliens?
the machine elves? Like,
yeah, the machine elves. Yeah. You want to call them the machine elves?
I think that's what is that what Terrence McKenna called them?
Yes. Yeah, he did.
I don't know. Explain this to me, because to me, if DMT can kind of like replicate the same things that Salvia is doing, and it's like this sort of like altered world, what do you guys think? Do you think the what are they called? Cosmonauts? Psychonauts? Soccer?
Psychonauts, right? That sounds cool.
Yeah, cosmonauts are the Russian air.
Right. But that's how I get there. I have to remember cosmonauts to get to psychonauts.
There's three kind of interpretations of what people think might be going on. One is a hallucination. Mm-hmm. One is like a collective unconsciousness that we can all somehow tap into, connect to, that is a part of our framework that we just can't perceive until you tap into that. And then another one is alien intelligences within an external reality. Like, yeah, the machine elves that they're actually like running stuff, that they're somehow not running. Running is a weird controlling word, but that they're a part of
They live in a different place and you're visiting them, right?
Yeah. Because a lot of people say that, you know, throughout history, whenever you hear of really intelligent people, and I don't mean to just put it on them, but like, when they can get information from either meditating or sleeping, I'm talking like Tesla, Einstein, you know, whatever, when they get information from the universe, some people think that this is the place that they're getting it from, that they may have been interacting with people, whether they knew it or not.
Well, I just think, yeah, sure. I'm with you on this journey. I'm not going to like butt heads with you at every turn, but like, I feel like I've found answers in my dreams. And I think it's just my brain resting and focusing and like, and being able to like work in a different way.
If you can disconnect from your,
like,
yeah.
With biology, there's still so much we don't know about sleep and the brain. They're kind of like frontiers in biology anyway. And so I find that a really interesting piece of this. The third option of it being a whole different thing seems the most like somebody has added a narrative to it, whereas the first two things you said are a little bit more like open to exploration. You know, like this sort of like it just feels like to associate what you see with a story is an extra step. And then everyone can get really excited about a story.
Totally.
But the
and
first
that's
two,
why I want to ask about the third one, because the first two, I'm like, yeah, cool.
Yeah. It's like, we can go down those avenues and continue to study down those avenues alongside like brain science and starting to understand perception.
They're like
more.
Wiring the brains of monkeys to hit a robotic arm and stuff.
Some of the medication I'm on, they like, I remember being a kid, a teenager, and asking like, how does lithium work for bipolar one? I say to my doctor, she says, we don't know. Like, you know, there are some psych drugs where it's like they don't know. They just know that it does work. And in medicine, all of the time, something is developed for one thing, but proves to be very helpful for another.
Viagra was that way.
Yeah, I heard about that. It's just they were like,
remember,
wow, bonus.
I think it was they were trying to do like a heart rate medicine or something. I don't remember. But then they were like, whoa, boners.
Yeah. They were like
billionaires now.
Everyone has boners. Everyone's hearts are stressed out, but the boners are strong.
Yeah. You might go blind, but that's a great side effect.
Whatever. You'll have a boner. What do you need to see it?
It's going to be great. You can feel it.
It's going to be good.
For 9 hours.
Yeah. For 9 hours.
Or sometimes
and
9 hours.
Call a doctor.
And then to call a doctor after you've had your fun.
These guys, though, these aliens that these psychonauts are seeing, is there any proof that they, whatever. Are these psychonauts saying that they're meeting the same aliens?
Well, so here's the thing. Anybody that is doing the study to map the world and interact with these beings, they're doing it now. So there's no new information.
Right.
But up until now, people have described the same type of being, which is mind-blowing to like do a drug. And then,
Is it mind-blowing though? I just want to challenge you on that, because like, is it mind-blowing or can't you see that like, because our brains are all, they all look similar or whatever. Like, is it that weird that they, under a hallucination, they would all kind of look the same? Is that weird? Maybe it is mind-blowing.
It's only mind-blowing to me because these descriptions were happening and don't quote me on this, but I'm just like, I feel like the descriptions of these entities existed beyond and before classic
but that's
UFO
also
alien movies.
You know, the experience where like you look at a light and then you close your eyes and then you see the light, and perception and the nervous system is really weird because we literally have like versions of the same machinery running. Yeah. You know, maybe seeing the same thing has a relationship with the systems just working that way. I mean, because the nervous system is weird. Like, I've done a lot of yoga. I trained as a yoga teacher right before the pandemic. And we were doing this thing once where we were chanting 108 times each of the mantra that went along with the chakras. And they're just sounds. And so we were all vibrating our bodies in different ways through these sounds and like concentrating that through the body. And it, you know, whether or not you apply something like spiritual to it, or you apply a narrative to it, we were all having experiences because your voice resonates in a certain way and produces a byproduct of experience. And we had an array of experiences. Anything that's a science, something that's built to give an altered effect on the body, it feels like people are going to have similar results in their perception, if that makes sense.
It 100% makes sense. And I'm pretty sure that it's like, if you look at like abnormal psychology or whatever, that's probably a thing where, like, I don't want to say it's like peer pressure, but well, okay. The only thing I'm thinking of is there was the one study where everybody looks at the door in an elevator, right? Everybody looks at the door in an elevator. That's just how it is.
Because it would be weird if you turned around.
Right. But these people would enter the elevator and they had like six people in there, or however many, facing the opposite way. And then the person who entered, the subject, would face the opposite way. Just because it's kind of peer pressure. And it's kind of like, well, why not? We're just in a box anyway. But that's suggestion. And I'm not trying to say that like these things have been suggested.
I love the comparison of, and this is me trying to call out brainwash, but like, I wonder if they took people from like third world countries and put them in an elevator, if they would also.
No, 100%. It's funny. When I was talking about that, I was like, well, this was probably America. Even when it comes to like lines or whatever, like lines in different countries, like lines don't mean anything. There's a lot of societal sort of like, this is the way that you act in this situation, right? Obviously. I'm thinking this doesn't apply. I feel like I let us down a bad road because...
Yeah, I don't know, because when I was talking about the yoga thing, I wasn't talking about like perception of story or societal norms. I was talking about the physical things that were happening on our bodies behind our eyes and the sensations in the body and the relationship with the nervous system, because I think psychedelics have a relationship with the nervous system greatly. Perception has a great relationship. So the biology piece of this is very interesting to me.
I always bring this story up that there's this monk that gave him psychedelics and they're like, have you ever experienced anything like this before? And his answer was, it wasn't as good as his meditation. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to look at other ways that people can have any sort of experience close to DMT. And like one of the big things is, yeah, sure, yoga, sure, meditation, but ultimately you can have experiences just going into your mind that might be similar. We just aren't accustomed to going into our mind.
Yeah, totally. And I feel like there's a tradition of people being incredibly curious about how to get there. And there are so many spiritual sciences like built off of avenues of how do you get there? How do you hack this body? What is that place? I just feel like there are so many traditions who have touched the edges of them, and the introduction of plants. And of course, like DMT comes from a plant tradition, likely, that's been like distilled and now is being manufactured by our science. It's really interesting to me because it's kind of like the thing where they're saying that like weed is getting more potent since it's gotten legal, and because of the way that it's and then people are getting addicted or sick to weed because we make these things with these high potencies. We want these results that like punch us in the brain with a very obvious experience. Whereas I feel like a lot of the traditions that are really curious curious about perception about these other places, who are curious about being psychonauts, essentially. They respect the body in this subtler way and understand that things take time and layer on each other and that kind of thing. And I think we're at a time where we develop things and potentize them and try to punch ourselves in the brain with them. Whatever the science is that's behind the DMT that makes it do this, like if it has a relationship, like ayahuasca and all of that kind of stuff, obviously comes from a different culture that gives it a different framework. And so maybe these things are brand new to us in our part of the framework. And what the mapping is just like, how do we, these British people at school, you know, mapping this area, you know, it's very Britain.
Oh, are they all British? You know?
Colorado's doing it. And
it's literally
so is,
called
Imperial College.
Yeah. Right, like, right. What are they colonizing? Yeah. The fucking
British?
Well,
who else
going to
be
better
than the British?
It's just like, it's almost not tangible or real until they have mapped it out. It's like,
I'm so sorry.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. It's like they're really into maps and taking over maps.
But Athena, you just said the funniest thing in the world, which is like, yeah, of course the imperial colonialism people want to like take over the brain map also.
Yeah, and like
hilarious.
And like codify it and own it and say this is how it is.
Yeah, yeah.
And
if
you
would like to experience the other side, it's only going to cost you $50 and it's worth it. Here's the map in case you don't get lost.
We can't trust the Brits with this shit, can we? Aren't they stuffy? They're like stuffy, dude.
I know.
Like,
it's funny
we invented hippies.
Comparing the Colorado version.
We didn't invent them. We stole them.
I mean, like the Colorado version that I was like hearing them talk about just sounded like the hippie version. It was like, we'll go in there and see what we can do. We're going to try to figure out how to interact with these beings.
Well, is there any progress? I know they're doing it now, but is there any progress so far, or have they released anything about like they've been doing?
Not at all. The fascinating
trust them, man.
I almost need to know the bios of everyone going in, because I'm like, well, what have you experienced? What have you done?
Yeah, because you're going on a mind trip. I'm not going to trust you. This is why we do the WoW scale. Like, before people listen to you, they need to know this is a litmus test. Here's where you're coming from. I can't just trust a bunch of British people to do.
The Colorado
DMT
guy was saying, like, you know, we want to try different religious people. We want to try different scientists. And he said this. He's like, we want to try to get some scientists in there to see if they can come up with anything to, you know, help the world out. And I'm like, whoa, dude, like you're like projecting. Like,
you're already trying to invent plumbing in the machine elves world. Like, what? It's really wild because like also like how do you get consent from your participants here without telling them some information about what this is, like screening for people? Even if you do want to get people from tons of backgrounds, they need to know like the risks and literally what this
because
is.
DMT
and it
is
sounds
not
fun, but
yeah, and
some
so it has to
say,
be someone willing to do it.
I would do it's it
that, which is
yeah,
a certain,
some people say,
you know,
that it felt like they were in there for 3 months, and I think it's because they lose perception of time.
Yeah. Hang on, I have to talk about this because I just remembered it and I thought of it earlier and forgot it. There's a guy watching a video or reading, I don't know, he did salvia. I know salvia is not DMT. I'm sorry to keep bringing it up, but
that's okay. It seems like they have a relationship, so
it feels like it.
Yeah,
he did salvia and then he lived as a different person for like 3 years, for like a long time. Like, he woke up, he was in a place, like the place had a town, it was like real life. He had a job, he had all these friends going like, your name is John, but his name was Hank or something like that, and he's like, no, I'm Hank, I'm from here. And they're like, no, you're John, we've known you forever. What's he gonna do? Like, he traveled around to see if he or his family existed in this world. They didn't. But it was like so real for him. And he lived there for 3 years. And then one day, it was the same sensation of when he came into it, which was he felt like he was rising out of the ground. And then he was just there. And he was in a different person's body who had been knocked out for some reason. I don't remember. I think he was water skiing or jet skiing or something. And then when he came back after 3 years, it was the same thing. He was just walking across the field. He's like, oh, there's my friends over there. And then just like the field stopped being, you know, concrete or tangible. I keep using all the same words, but he fell through it into his body, woke up, it was less than a minute, or maybe more than a minute. It was Christmas. People were calling the authorities. What is that? Like, what is that? Was that real? Is there a different... I really like where you guys are going. I just needed
well,
to...
Well, time is weird, man.
Yeah.
Like, time is weird because we built, you know, ways to measure time based on how we wanted to measure time.
Sure.
And then you go to sleep. And again, sleep, the uncharted territory itself, science-wise.
Right.
Or you take
right.
a drug and it's uncharted.
But the thing about time this is what's crazy about time is, like, when you get stoned, it slows down, right? And, like,
yeah.
you blame it on your brain, but, like, maybe we just don't have it right. Like, maybe... Well,
yeah, totally. Or maybe it's both. You know, maybe you've flipped
yeah.
that toggle and it's... like, I'm a big fan of... why not both?
Sure.
This
I
is
love,
why,
I love both.
Like, we sleep so much of our life. I feel like sleep actually has more weight on our experience than we attribute it to having.
I think so, too.
How do you know what to do there? Because we've never been taught there's anything to do there. It's not real, whatever. So I'm just saying, like, the perception that we have of reality is so weirdly concrete in a situation where it's not concrete at all. And so I believe most out of anything in this realm of DMT that, like, oh, well, maybe we are connecting to ourselves in a different way that we can't perceive. And, like, that makes the most sense to me because...
It makes the most sense to you because it's the easiest thing. Like, right? It's the easiest thing for you to believe, right? That we're like, here's the thing about sleep. This is where I disagree with you guys. I watch my cat sleep and she's, like, having dreams and, like, running around and stuff. And I do not believe that she, like, went to a different reality, or I just think the brain is working through your reality and going, like, how do I make sense of this? Because it's all fucking weird, right?
I think there are I always think that there are a few kinds of dreams. I think there are digestion dreams that are about you and your reality. I think that there is, like, dreams that you're solving something. I write music, and if I'm writing a lot of music, I start writing music in my sleep. The same thing with painting, which I also do. And so you can
Able to I don't want to distract you, but are you able to wake up and then apply that stuff, or is it gone once you
100%.
Wake up?
Yeah. I mean, I've been
really?
It's been like that since I was little. Yeah, totally. When you're, like, really obsessed with something and it's the way that your brain works, and, like, for me, I have a compulsive need to create all of the time. Like, mm-hmm. my dream life has a huge relationship to what I create with my art, especially in I would say, like, what I would call, like, the less constructed art forms, like less in my writing and more in stuff like paint and melody, because music is weird like that. Like, it uses both sides of it lights up the brain in a totally different way. And so, like, if I yeah. am writing a lot of music, or if I have been playing my guitar a lot and I love it and it's lighting me up in this certain way and I do it all day or, like, before bed, it's almost how it's like, it's my nervous system is being regulated by that. So, like, yeah, I do. When I was little, I found my dad also struggled and never got treatment, right? So he was always seeking self-help CDs from his priest and, like, meditation tapes and stuff like this. And I must have been, like, 7 or 8, but I went out to the garage to, like, box of discarded self-help tools. And I found, like, a meditation thing that, like, counted you down. And I was really small and I was just really curious. But I went into that place where you could get up and move, but it's sort of like a sleep paralysis place almost, where it's like you don't want to.
Oh, like astral
finger.
Projection or something?
No, it was like more like self-hypnosis. Like, it was more
okay.
like relaxation and then self-hypnosis. And so I felt like my consciousness was, you know, there, but I was feeling like that my body was very, very heavy. But what was interesting, it was like, I could move, but I'm not going to move, and I'm existing
yeah.
between spaces. From that moment on, I started to get really curious about the in-between spaces. And I used to keep on, because I started playing clarinet when I was really young, and I was, like, really obsessed on Mozart, right? And so I would start to listen to my Mozart tapes on my little cassette things under all of my bed, and I would go to sleep and I would see if I could still hear, like, the clarinet concerto in the dream. And of course I could, because it was happening in my reality. But the dream, mm-hmm. it also had it, you know? And so mm-hmm. this sort of idea that you can bring a thread from both worlds is really, mm-hmm. really interesting.
Just based on, like, all of the work that you've done about like psychology and everything like that, these psychonauts, what do you honestly think that they're seeing? Do you think that they're seeing, like, what do you think? Do you think it's their brain? Just what do you think? I'm not going to even lead anymore.
I haven't been there to where they've been, but I've been around a lot of people who have gone to those places, and none of those people have decided to stay in those places. And none of those people, it seems to me, have successfully brought back any new wisdom from those places, or any more love, or any more of anything that I might value, other than an experience, like being an experience seeker and saying, I did that thing. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes I measure things by, like, what can you bring back? What can you bring back? I don't know what they're seeing. I don't know what they're doing. I only hear stories afterward. You know, like, I used to hang out with guys who did a lot of drugs, and I played music with them, and it was like a whole thing, because I would be very fascinated like watching them all do ketamine or something one night. Sure. And I'd be like, oh, this is what that is. And so that thing about watching your cat sleep is very interesting, because I've always been like the observer, because you're right, I am restricted. The stakes are higher for me. I don't want to break my brain. You know, like,
yeah.
But watching people is really interesting. It does feel like they're all joined together somewhere else when they do certain things. Like, they're all putting on the same glasses together, and those glasses are giving them something very, very real that has a quality to it. Like, if they're going together, or there's a lot of people who have like DMT trips or ayahuasca things who do bring something back, who do change something about themselves and their lives. My question is kind of like, other than having an experience and being curious, why do people want to go there? Do you feel like you belong there? Should you go there? Because you can't live full time there, because your loved ones would be very sad.
Yeah, I think as a species, to survive long term, I wonder if there's some kind of tool in there for the longevity of having to change environments in some way, you know, like,
that's really interesting. Yeah, like, that's a good question.
Have we changed environments on Earth? You know, yeah, you could argue that we went from the grasslands and the caves to houses, but we're fighting environments that we should already be able to survive in.
But some people think at one point we ate that mushroom along the way.
Solar systems go through cycles. So if we are born onto a planet, it's almost like built into us that we might need to survive the cycle of the star.
That's what I was going to say.
That's a great thought.
Here's the thing. I said this last week with Hilton. Humans won the planet, and we just keep winning it. And I would say that if you look at Earth, and you go back however old Earth is, I think like you could probably see civilizations rise and fall. And I think that each of those civilizations would be different. We always talk about like the deer is able to walk the second that it's born and humans aren't.
Speak for yourself. Sorry.
I will laugh thinking of a human that could walk right out the gate. They might get some advertising for like, I don't know, what, Sherman? Nike? You know, someone's going to come in. Yeah. And like
little baby Nike shoes. It reminds me of that thing where it's like once that one guy passed the mile record for 4 minutes.
Yeah. And then everyone
runners were able to. If one baby, then all the other babies.
I believe that. And I think that
I totally do too. It's so real. Yeah.
I think there's some sort of like bark or whatever you want to say about human evolution. There's some sort of like residual, oh, we remember this and this is why we stay at the top. This is why we will always beat the tigers and the bears, because we are good at this and like we are innately savage and we'll fuck you up and then we'll build some buildings and stuff. I don't know how it really applies to like the other side, the DMT dream, whatever you want to call it. I guess I'm wondering, okay, this is a question. When the First Nations people do ayahuasca, and you guys might not be able to answer this, they have never seen like gears and stuff, right? Like,
well, okay.
Ayahuasca is different, isn't it? It doesn't have the like machine elf stuff. Does it?
I thought that it did, because I thought Terrence McKenna did more ayahuasca than.
Oh, did he?
But here's my thing. They're saying now that they found some old cave paintings that were like looked interesting, where like some of these drawings are drawing the same beings and they have some of the geometrical patterns. So people are questioning now if ancient civilizations that had ayahuasca, if they're experiencing these same realms.
If that's true, then it does give more credence to this drug is like taking us to a different place. Because my theory was First Nations, it's living off the land. Their society is like a community, but it's like villages. And our society is like fucking rule everything. It's the whole British colonialism thing. If these First Tribes people are seeing gears, which is not a part of their society, right? I mean, it is now, but like, I guess it depends on what era we're talking about. Oh, maybe if you take these drugs, there's something about like the world that you live in that's applying to these hallucinations or trips or whatever. But if there's like ancient people.
Two things for me in the realm of what you're talking about. One is, first off, there's one society, and I forget who it was, and it was an old little quip that I just kept in the back of my mind, where they give infants ayahuasca.
Oh God.
And I was like, oh shit, that's crazy. But also, why?
Hey, welcome to the world. Is it weird? Here, now it's weirder.
Because
does it make them walk right away?
Dude, right? Yeah. If like that's closer to the nature of reality, then why not experience that than just seeing what your parents do or whatever? And that's one thing. And the other thing was what I appreciated was societies that have shamans just go into this realm, you know, because as a whole, we don't want everyone to fucking trip. And, you know, I don't, not that I need to define that, but I'm just like, I like the idea of experienced people going into this realm and
yeah,
bringing
like there's
back
a
information.
Person whose yeah. job it might be to go to these places, and maybe we're finding those people now, and maybe, you know, like maybe we're finding what that is to us and saying, yeah. Oh, we're going to go there too. We're going to get a guy like this too.
It's funny because right now it's just like, oh, you know, like I just really want to go there, as opposed to someone's yeah. like, well, you know, I feel a responsibility to bring back answers, what, yeah. you know, whatever, not to judge.
It seems like a skill, doesn't it, to be able to take these things and come to these conclusions. It seems like somebody who would have to understand themselves and apply things to, like that idea I was saying of bringing things back. I think that's a very yeah. special, has to be a very special person.
My funny parallel is we've had astronauts go to the moon, but they were so military based that they had a job to do. And they didn't yeah, bring anything yeah. back for the human experience, other than maybe a couple pictures. But otherwise, like, yeah,
and, like,
I did
some
what
rocks.
I, you know? But like I did what I was told to do. I didn't observe anything else outside of that. When they first got interviewed, when they got back, they were like, I don't remember if I saw stars. I'm like, you just went to the moon for humanity and you don't remember if you saw stars. Like, that's a brainwashed military person that well, I
yeah,
don't want
yeah,
going
the kind
into...
of like focus and tension you had to put yourself under to do that. But, you know, damn, that sucks.
You guys are talking about skills and shamans and like, okay, they've been there. So now they're our guide or whatever. I very much doubt that anytime you do it, it's the same and you can get any kind of foothold as to like where you are. The only things I can compare it to is like dreams. And then like getting stoned.
Mm-hmm.
And both of those are trying to hold on to sand. It's like, yeah, it's great, but like it's gone the second that it's done. I just really doubt that there's anything to this. I think what I'm saying is these psychonauts are just going to be habitual drug users. And
yeah, is there
we're
any
not going
to
get anything out of this.
Can we recreate, re-experience anything?
Yeah, I doubt it. Because how do you do that?
I'm really curious. I'm glad that they're giving different kinds of science and avenues of things money, because there are like in a way that I think about it, I'm like, it's really cool that people are open to funding this sort of thing, because there are parts of biology specifically and medicine that are understudied and people live in pain. And so if people are being open-minded enough to fund and be curious about something like this, then maybe finally, women's health will be better at endometriosis, because the whole entire medical canon is based on male bodies and the feminine mystique is understudied. Like, right? So like every single woman, you know, with PCOS or whatever the fuck, it's just because they're a couple centuries behind on actually studying it. And so if we're doing this now, maybe somebody will be like, hey, like, hey, there's weird stuff. Oh my God. Maybe we should like go and look at that uterus. Like,
my funniest parallel to support you is the position women going into labor in America is still more comfortable for the doctor than
Yes,
the person in labor.
Oh, I know. I'm writing a play called Frankenstein Midwife. And so I've been doing nothing but like looking at the interaction between like when did midwives turn into doctors and at what point did science, you know, we have saved a lot of babies and a lot of mothers through medical science. Like one of my very good friends is a doula and she very much has taught me a lot about this sort of stuff. So yeah, I think that that's really interesting.
Like they took gravity away from labor. And okay, yeah, cool.
That's why the babies aren't coming out running because they need to like, you need to squat and then like somebody needs to, and then
or,
put it on its feet, cut it loose.
Push, or, why aren't you pushing?
Or we know about water births. What if we were all just supposed to be in the water all the time? What if we're water people and we just don't know
it? Yeah.
I can see that with me. I really, really, really love being in the water. If I could.
Oh, I hate it. I can tell you
so much.
I can't tell you the reason that we're not. You can't breathe underwater.
No,
it's horrible.
That's for real.
It's really bad. It's bad. It gives me claustrophobia. I don't know, man. I'm picturing this world as like unmappable because I feel like it's amorphous, but then maybe if it's not, it's just so big. It's like if the answer to life lies within that realm, how and why, and like, how would we ever, and are we supposed to, you know?
Right. So I see whatever is creating life around us, whatever you attribute that to, it is geometrical. And so on a smaller scale, it's even more geometrical. There's this famous interview of this woman who did acid for the first time, and she's just talking about all the different colors that she sees. And I'm like, well, allowing you to see, to perceive things differently beyond your eyes allows you to see the geometry. So maybe it's just like, you know, zooming in a little bit. Maybe that's a geometry to see. I don't know. So just saying that, like,
because I know that you love math. Blah, so stupid. Because it's fake. It's all fake, right? Like we made up math to like make sense of this stuff that doesn't matter. So we're like, okay, 1 + 1 = 2. And like, but that's made up. It's all made up.
It's a language where we can talk about our world.
100%. That's not what I'm saying. I don't know that geometry is the answer because you see a bunch of geometrical shapes. You might as well, because we can't understand what that actually means. Yes, you can apply it to this man-made thing that we created called geometry, but that doesn't mean that geometry.
I just mean the pattern of creation. We see geometry in that. I understand we created the language, but the way that it replicates itself.
Nature has a pattern.
The pattern, yeah.
Yeah, like the fungi, like the mycelial network, like the way that your eye looks like a certain nebula, like all of this pattern of nature.
I think these are red herrings. I think if the answer was that obvious, that we would just use geometry and...
But if it is really a place, any new place that someone has never set foot on before always seems enormous, unmappable, strange. Mm-hmm. Like any new place that you don't see anything familiar, I think must always like break the brains of the person who has washed ashore, you know, and seem enormous.
I don't think a lot of the perception is ocular. That's why I think that's why I say smaller. And that's why I say geometry. It's just like, well, we're still experiencing stuff, but like to perceive anything without our eyes is to maybe experience, you know, it's like a dream when you like all the perception changes of where your viewpoint is. Are you behind yourself? Are you in yourself?
Mm-hmm. I'm taking umbrage with whatever this other plane of existence is can kind of be mapped out with a math that you use to play pool.
The technology seems like it needs to grow with the new things that are discovered, which I think is part of our evolution is, you know, technology is part of our nature and we keep pushing it to be able to see more with it.
It's true.
Making yeah. tools. And
I think
like,
ego is trying to map it out, and we may not have a
I
map.
I think that mapping it out is kind of the wrong question. Like, the yeah. real question is sort of like, maybe what tools might we need to be more curious about this? This curiosity versus mapping is really interesting. Or just being open to the experiment being different. It's really interesting that, like, in science, to get funding, you need to, like, create a hypothesis that has a solidity to it, or, like, whatever it is. And that you cannot just be like, we're going to continue getting information because this is so, so new.
Yeah.
Like, and we don't really know what we need to do with this. And then it's just like, let's do maps. We're doing maps. Like,
I mean, it's a good romantic version of this experiment. These people going in and doing that stuff. We could give a lot of credence to these people and like make up all of these things where we're like, well, this is the reason that it's useful because of like science and the scientific method, but really it's probably just a bunch of people getting stoned. Do you guys believe that by doing drugs like DMT, you're opening the door to all of life's answers in a different plane, or are these motherfuckers tripping?
I appreciate the idea that whatever this is, because to me, psychedelics will break down a society because there's so many things that go against us being a part of a society. I appreciate that whatever they come back with will not fit into the model that we've created. So I'm excited to see.
Yeah, but do you what think they it's can real? Bring do you back. Do you think it's a different plane of reality?
Yes, I do. I think it's a different, not necessarily plane, but a different aspect of reality that we don't observe / appreciate. As lame as this sounds, just like the idea of love, it's not something that's quantifiable or recordable, but it's real. And
yeah,
so I hope they
it doesn't
can
sound
bring
lame.
Something. Yeah.
Love, you mean the glue, the thing we fight for, the thing that we're all seeking, the thing that helps us survive? Yeah, I agree with you about that, like, aspect of reality. I don't think we can put it in such clear boxes as, like, other dimension or a place that has all the answers. But it's like, okay, there's this other place. There might be this other place. It might work like this. It might have been here all along. And now we kind of are like, oh, I can see that too. And I'm so curious, like, you know, because early experiments on anything are just sort of like asking initial questions, and then people change their lanes based on what they find. So the base, like, I think in a big picture, like, what are the results of this? And as far as what are the next questions that are asked about this place? Do we still frame it as a place after those questions are asked? You know, how does being curious about it change the next questions that are asked? Like, does it go from this idea like, oh, it's another place that it has all the answers to, okay, well, it's just this other thing that's part of our experience that we now include in our perception, whatever. I am loath to give it a mystical dimension, because I think that that's an individual framework experience, even when you do go to other places. Maybe it's so, so different and then we get used to it. Maybe it's so, so different and then we just understand that it's one of these places where we can get ideas from or we can spend some time in. Like I like the idea of it eventually being folded in as something that's really the same thing as germs. Like, oh, I can see them in a microscope. Yep, I can wash my hands. Yeah. You know, I can get a virus. Yeah, I believe that. And I see that happening. You know, I'm going to go to the place like, and maybe there's a map. Maybe there's not a map. Maybe maps. They don't love you like I love you. Maps. But like.
I always thought it said Wade. It sounds a lot like Wade.
Wade. They don't love you like I love you.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you take that? Oh, that's really, really beautiful.
I didn't take it the beautifully way.
Oh, no.
I know.
It's such a beautiful song.
I know. All right. Let's wrap it up. This is good. I don't know. I feel like there's a lot more to talk about. And we're going to continue the conversation. Go to patreon.com/reallifesci-fi.
Can I recommend reading a quote from Dune to wrap it up?
Oh, awesome.
Oh, my God.
Okay. I'm going to read this. I have it mostly memorized because I think about it a lot. But
this is the wow scale right here.
There is in all things a pattern that is part of our universe. It has symmetry, elegance, and grace. These qualities you find always in that which the true artist captures. You can find it in the turning of the seasons, the way sand trails along a ridge. in the branch clusters of the creosote bush, of the pattern of its leaves. We try to copy these patterns in our lives and in our society, seeking the rhythms, the dances, the forms that comfort. Yet it is possible to see peril in the finding of ultimate perfection. It is clear that the ultimate pattern contains its own fixity. In such perfection, all things move towards death. Frank Herbert.
That's nihilistic, right?
No, I mean, it depends on your relationship with death.
I welcome it.
Well, I'll do another
wait,
show
wait, wait,
tune.
Wait.
Because
wait,
I have
wait.
A
no,
less
no.
nihilistic one if you want.
No, real quick.
Maudeeb.
Rank, I've never read Dune. I'm guessing okay. You read Dune.
Yeah.
And at what point, when did you read it?
I was 15 when I read the first Dune book, and it was around the same time that the sci-fi miniseries were coming out, and me and my best friend watched those like many, many, many times.
I hear those are the best ones. I hear those are better than the movie.
Well, no, I love Villeneuve's films. I think the Villeneuve's films are the best ones.
The new ones?
Yes, I love them. There's a lot missing from the world, like for sure, but I really respect his dream and his vision. And also, like, you don't understand that he's also being trained as a mentat, but I digress. Yeah, I really love Villeneuve's films. It feels like seeing, because I've actually read all of the books several times, like it's my favorite thing.
Sure.
I'm grappling with Frank Herbert's homophobia, but it's okay. When I watched Villeneuve's first film, I was just so excited. It's my absolute favorite. I read these books so many times. They had like a really huge imprint on my spiritual life because they opened up avenues of thinking about things in a way that I wasn't really exposed to where I grew up, which was Long Island and raised by gym teachers. So like I, you know, really show me a lot. It like gave me a lot of spiritual language and questions, just a ton of questions. And thinking about things in a really, really big way. And I think like dyed-in-the-wool Dune book fans all really respect all versions of Dune because we have a relationship with dreams. And it's very clear that Villeneuve, when I watch his movie as a person who's read the entire Dune saga several times and plays Dune Imperium Uprising every night, like when I watch his film, it's like stepping into somebody else's dream. And I've had this dream before, especially the first one. It was like, I know this dream. This is one of my dreams. But this is a French guy dreaming it. Like, you know, like this is a French guy dreaming it. And I know the mentats are doing their mentat thing there because I fill in everything. Like, so I don't care if something is like missing and I understand.
Right.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, that's that experience of dreams. Like if you're a dyed-in-the-wool old... Oh, you know, old Sam Daddy, like me from the old Siege, your respect for dreams and images is like myriad. Like, that's what I feel when I talk to deep Dune fans.
Why don't people like Jack London? Why don't we all picture ourselves as White Fang? Why is that not a deal?
Well,
do
I've
I
never
like
read
inferior
that.
Literature? Oh,
no,
well, I mean, it's good.
I don't believe in a separation between highbrow and lowbrow. So, like, I don't.
I just like dogs. I just want to read books about dogs.
Oh, wow. That's beautiful. I love dogs.
All right. Let's wrap it up. All right.
Yeah.
Give us your
plugs, Athena. You got any plugs on the way out?
Yeah. Star Eater Astrologer Podcast.
Right. You can find my astrology work at athenareddy.com/astrology. That's my name /astrology. The info about my podcast is on there. Or you can just look it up, Star Eater Astrology. I'm on Instagram at Sir Athena, and you can find all information about my upcoming clown shows, including a show that I am doing called John Newspaper and Friends about the real invention of the newspaper. So where I play John Newspaper, you know who I am, inventor of the newspaper. So do follow me on Instagram because I'll have information about John Newspaper and more.
Thank you so much for being here. And
Wheelie Bad Movies, my thing, the other thing I've been plugging will be done by this time. Yeah.
What have you been plugging that's done?
Oh, at the Elysian, the game show for the 10th Circle, the Devil's Got a Game.
Oh, yeah.
Show.
I saw that on their calendar. That looks exciting.
Bad friend. I don't remember this at all. Do I need to go to it to maintain our friendship? Do I have to do that?
No.
All right. Good.
Just like the photo.
Okay. Well, all right. Thank you everyone for listening. Go to patreon.com/reallifesci-fi. We're going to continue this conversation. And remember, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not after you. We'll see you next time.
Real life sci-fi.